Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this Tuesday, July 22nd, 2025. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Pruse?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Therrien?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad?
Here. Okay, first up is Ordinance 6318. An ordinance authorizing lease of Golden Heart Plaza to the Festival of Fairbanks. This is advanced from July 28th. We've had a good discussion on it already. Any other questions with this? Mr. Cleworth.
Is this just basically a renewal?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And you have a fiscal note of $1.
Is this once a year or every 3 years?
It's a 3-year term.
Okay.
So now, Mike.
Yes,
can you explain what happened at Festival Fairbanks, at the Golden Heart Plaza with the paint?
Yes, yeah, so for Golden Days, the Chamber of Commerce used spray paint rather than spray chalk to outline the vendor booths. So there's a bunch of spray painted white lines on the decorative bricks. I don't know how we're gonna get it off there, but we'll work on it.
We have Jeremiah Cotter who will work miracles, right, Jeremiah? Yes.
So since Jeremiah's team, he'll have to do that. Is there any expense to Chamber that will be?
They said that they would pay for any cost that we have from it. I just, at this point, I don't know what we do, because that the laser doesn't work on that because it burns the paint underneath the red paint. So it's, you know, pretty much just waiting for, you know, like scrubbing it and hoping that we can get it off.
Mr. Clearworth.
You might try pure alcohol, like rubbing alcohol. That works in graffiti that we found on wood and on metal. It may not work, but
no sipping.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to drink rubbing alcohol.
Anyway, but I guess that just also goes to show us that Festival Fairbanks takes great pride in that facility and how they do it. And they're always on it whenever there's anything that happens there of trash or things. And this is one of those things where you say, you got to be kidding me, but they're not. So anyway, we move on. Ordinance 6319, ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, Section 2-119, Order of Business, Citizens Addressing City Council on a Section 2-120, Rules of Procedure. It's introduced by myself, and this is basically taking the public hearing comment period from 30 minutes to 1 hour. Anytime there's something large, we do it anyway. So I thought, let's expand it to that. We usually have between, 4 to 6 people. So we have about 15 minutes of public comment. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll go to item number 4. Ordinance 6320, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 2, Article 3, Boards and Commissions, to change the composition of the Board of Plumbers and Examiners and to remove the requirement that City Council must confirm the election of the chair. This is advanced from the July 28th meeting. Pretty basic. Any thoughts? Ms. Sprinkle?
This is just to keep it a cleaner process, but is our voting or not voting causing there a problem or delay in getting a commissioner?
No.
Okay.
It does not cause a delay,
okay.
But it could.
Okay.
We had Mike Desmond, who was the head of this. He owns Western Mechanical, mechanical engineer by trade, mechanical contractor. And he was in charge for 15 years. And all of a sudden, you have a changeover, and all of a sudden, well, hold it, we got to go back to this. And so we're this updating a ordinance that was probably from the 1980s.
So does who gives him or who chooses then at this point?
They will choose themselves.
Okay, very good.
Sort of like our Fairbanks Diversity Council. This is probably the only board that you choose, you confirm rather, who the chair is.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Okay. Ordinance 6321, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Article Chapter 2, Article 5, Division 3, Budget, enacting Section 2-2659, Capital Project Fund Preparation and Presentation to the City Council, requiring a minimum balance, fund balance, for the city capital funds. This is advanced from July 28th, and this was from Mr. Cleworth. Mr. Cleworth, you want to bring this through us again? We had a pretty rousing discussion on it last time.
Yeah, we discussed that pretty much at the last council meeting. I don't know what more to add at this point. So.
Any other questions? Seeing none.
Mayor, I would make a comment.
Yes.
All I see attached is our Resolution 5128 that was amended. Can the city afford to, instead of lowering it to $4 million, keep it at $5
million? Jerry?
That's kind of what I envisioned originally, was $5 million. We're above that now, even though we've tapped into it pretty heavily. But it is basically, I had a good discussion with Margarita, and she was pitching for three, and so we just kind of compromised on four. I'd like to see it higher, but I don't want to restrict anything either. But compromises have goods and bads to them, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Coming into the item number six, City Hall Heating Project Construction Cost Update. Ms. Terpristash, come on up. You have in front of you Design Alaska Project Construction Cost Estimates. Mr. Pristash, you want to bring us through this, please?
Right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. We had a 65% submittal. And then we have a 95% submittal, and the contractor is just about done. The consultant is just about done. And so when I was looking at these last month, I saw from the 65% up to the 95%, there was an increase of about $1 million. The construction cost estimate is $4.7 million in round numbers now. It was $3.7 million. So I think, Margarita, the budget amount is $3,250,000, and out of that, we pay for construction and the design fees. Correct?
Yes, yeah. That is correct.
So the total we have budgeted is $3,250,000. So when you look at this construction estimate of 4.7, then the design fees, you know, we're at $5 million. And then I figured, well, for construction project going into a building, they put 5% contingency. I added another 10 to it because 20% seems more reasonable too for a planning level estimate. So when you do all that, you have a required amount, a planning level estimate of $5,560,000, and right now we have budgeted $3,250,000. So we're short about $2.3 million in the budget.
How long have we been looking at this project?
Probably a year and a half anyway.
Okay.
2 years.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So if we go with any one of these, or I'm not sure there's an option, and we involve this new ordinance for our capital budget, will we be underneath? Will we be breaking our own law at that point to pay for this?
Yes. You currently have $3.2 million remaining for this project. It's really $3.182 million. Remaining for this project, if you accept the what he anticipated of a $5.5 million project, then you're looking at an additional $2.3 million. And right now, the capital fund is setting at $5.98 million as unassigned. So you're very close to that number.
Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead, then Mr. Cleworth.
What makes this 1.8 go to 2.8? That's a substantial change. The other parts don't seem like they're drastically off. That one, that appears to be the biggest change in your mechanical contractor piece.
If from their 65% to their 95%, they just said construction costs based on what they're seeing happened since the original estimate. Inflation, supply costs, material costs, labor costs. That was their general, that was their reason.
35%?
It looks like 25% from 3.7 to 4.7.
No, I'm just looking for the mechanical contractor. It goes from 1.8 to 2.8.
Where is that exactly?
First line.
Oh, I see.
Cost. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. $1 million. The contractor's bid is coming in $1 million high on a $1.8 million deal.
Mm-hmm. That's the general contractor. Yep.
Yep.
That's what they're saying.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Gosh, I can't tell from this. Is this based on steam heat or what kind of heat?
We're sticking with steam heat from the street, from the utility. And when it comes into the building, there'll be a steam to hot water exchanger. So instead of steam coming all the way to the unit heaters, hot water will be coming to the unit heaters. Steam comes into the building, there's a heat exchanger, it heats up the hot water, and then the hot water is pumped through the building.
Doesn't, bear with me because I don't know, isn't there an option for hot water that the city gets sometimes, or some people, some customers?
There is hot water. Mm-hmm.
That comes to, it comes to the building, doesn't need an exchanger.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that option here?
Oh, we do, but this was considered the best option. After studies of fuel, natural gas, district heat and steam heat.
Okay.
This bid estimate makes this construction at this time probably unattainable. So we'll have to look at grant funding, items like that, to get this done. So this will be more of a precedent in front of the Island Homes project that we're trying to get grant funded. So this is that wake-up call. It's nothing that is of a critical item that must be done at this exact time, but you should know the costs involved as they come out. We've committed $3,200,000 to this project so far, and it's come up much higher than we thought, so we start working on funding sources. Mr. Ringstead.
Now, looking at these two estimates, I mean, one is dated June and one is dated April. So in 2.5 months, they increased their bid by 50%. Maybe our first estimate was not worth paying for.
What they were doing is you're 65% is their 65% through the project of the cost. Then if they're 95%, whoa, this is where we're at. This is our harder number. So
we missed by 50%. That's a big chunk.
Yeah. So basically, as Bob says, you know, we better be prepared for about a $5.5 million project versus the 3.2 as originally thought. Ms. Tidwell. Ms. Therian.
Could I ask Bob a question?
Of course.
So let's say we go one or two more years. How much more do you think it's going to end up costing? Considerably more given inflation and tariffs and everything that's going on?
It probably wouldn't be less, right? You know, so, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we did it 2 years from now, it went up 7%, 8%, 10%. I wouldn't be surprised. But, I mean, remember, this is a planning level estimate. So we have enough money to go into construction. It could come in less, right? This is what I'm saying, where we should have this much money available to go into a construction of this nature. There's contamination in the building. There's a lot of unknowns. You know, this stuff is from 1935, this piping system. We have to work around people in the building. We have to keep it open. There's a lot of things to consider here, doing a project of like this. And I wanted everybody to realize that, you know, given all the revenue sources and all the other expenditures, the roof has to be fixed still. So,
Ms. Therrien.
Where would you get a grant fund to pay for doing this? Are there specific grants for increasing building costs for heating systems?
I'd have to look into it. I'm sure there are, especially this building, this historic building.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Is there any possibility or need, or is it smart to do some of this in stages? Is it all or nothing, or can you do something ahead of time to help
mitigate?
Well,
there's one supply to the building, okay? One steam supply. Now, we did as much as we could under the Cushman project, came down the street as far as we possibly could. So if we came into the building, replace all the valving and everything, the service essentially comes into the building with the heat exchanger, that could be done as a phase. And the existing system would tie back into that new work, if you're following me. Mm-hmm. We have the service coming off the main, we put the exchanger in, but then our existing system ties into that steam system. So we're still on steam in the building, but we have a new service. That could be a stage.
Is that a sensible thing to do?
It's always going to cost more when you do it in phases, but you're doing it over time. So the time value of money.
Right.
It might be something that we could afford to do. But the best, the cheapest cost is to do it all at once. Well,
nothing's cheap.
Not necessarily, because of time value of money.
Okay.
Right. Not necessarily.
Just throwing that out.
Okay. Mr. Marnie.
So how many bids did we actually get on this project?
We're just design now.
This is just design.
This is just design. We went through the process of getting a designer. So this designer's work product to us was to complete the design. You know, we got the 65 and the 95, and we have plans set for advertisement. And part of their work product was not only to develop the plans and the specs and to help us with the advertisement, but to give us a construction estimate. So that's what this is. This is a planning level construction estimate. We're just paying them for the design and the plans and the advertisement ready to go. But before we advertise, we would have to have a certain amount of funding. And we're at 3.2, and we need $2 million more.
So this could be way low.
Well, I think it's a reasonable guess.
Ms. Tidwell.
Is this something that, like, if we were to advertise it, we would get multiple things?
Oh,
or like
sure.
Some of our other projects where sometimes we don't get any or just one, this actually would bring several bid?
I think so. I think the plans are reasonable. You know, like when we advertised the Portland Loo, we didn't get any bids. But that was the way, you know, it seemed more complicated, I guess, or it wasn't enough value or whatever. When we did it as time and material, so we got it done well under the estimate. The daycare center was similar. So this project here, with Design Alaska doing the design, I would bet we'd get three bids.
Any other questions? Thank you, Bob. We have Chrissy Meredith available. Because next is the FECC personnel proposal. Has everyone read this? Christy, you want to bring us through it, please?
Hello. So what I'm wanting to do is to change my call taker positions. We had those added into the budget last year as part-time positions, where we moved them to part-time. They're not really working the way we wanted to, and we're also trying to hire and train our full-time employees, the dispatchers. And so I'm wanting to change some of those call taker positions into a supervisor position. We had enough people that were on the supervisors. I do have one more person on the list, but we are in a place right now that I can fill a supervisor's position and have one more supervisor in the room to help all of our newer dispatchers and everything like that. and it would be more beneficial to the department than to have part-time call takers. We would love to have part-time call takers. We'd love to have full-time ones. We just do not have the capacity to train them right now and to hire them as well. We have to choose to hire a part-time and not get a full-time in the room and train them, which would take a little bit longer. But so for us right now, it would be better to have that supervisor position to be able to have another supervisor that they can go and ask and that's already trained and knows things about the center versus having a call taker come in part-time. The other part of the part-time call takers is they usually always have another job. So they're not working as many hours as we would like them to work. And it's just not as much of a benefit. And it's a little hard sometimes if they only work 12 hours a week. Well, it seems like 12 hours. We have continuing education that we have to do. So they're spending their time doing that. Just to meet the standards, they're trying to catch up to all their emails that they missed. It's just not as beneficial to the people in the room and to the city for having these part-time positions.
Mr. Cleworth.
Good morning, Christy. Looking at the budget here, we funded 3.5 call takers. And did we amend that? Because you're putting in here, it says removal of 4 of the current 5.5. What changed there that I'm not aware of?
I got on my thing, I have 5.5.
If I can address that, it's 3.5.
Ms. Bell.
The 3.5 is FTEs. So if you look at page 143, you'll see that that is made up of 5 part-time and 1 full-time. So it's not by position, it's by FTEs when you're reviewing at 3.5. Because you have 5 people at 0.5 and then 1 at a full-time. Hopefully that helps. There's 1 full-time call taker, and then there's 5 part-time, making up that 3.5.
It's the new math.
Gotcha, okay.
Valerie.
Just so I'm clear, you're removing 4 part-time, is that correct? So there'd only be 1 part-time?
Is that your plan, Christy?
Yeah, it would be 1 full-time. She works the front desk. And then I have 1 trained that is the position she applied for, was the call taker. And she works as many hours as she can. She has 2 other jobs as well, but she loves that part of the job. That's what she applied for. And so she's trained upstairs and downstairs. So if the front desk was gone, she can actually go down there and work as well. And so I would like to keep her.
Can I do this administratively, or do we need a resolution on this? Because I'm just looking at a proposal.
I think that at least
a memo. Charge, you can chime in at any time.
I think at least a memo to the council would be appropriate. To me this makes a lot of sense, though. We're trying to get everybody back in the room and have, you know, fewer remotes and have one of the remote folks who's coming back. She's very, you know, she's been with the department for years and years and years. She would make an excellent supervisor. I don't see any issue with this.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I seem to remember meeting a woman who was going to move from someplace to come here to then be maybe a supervisor. Are we talking about that same lady?
No, another one.
Yeah. In addition to?
Yeah.
So, okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, we're trying to close out the remotes.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Little by little, we're doing that. Ms. Tidwell.
Just a question. You had mentioned, this is for Christy, you had mentioned that it takes longer to train a full-time call taker than a part-time? What's the difference in the training between the two?
It's a full-time dispatcher. A dispatcher takes a lot longer because you have to learn the radio part and everything like that. The call taker doesn't take as long, but it does take our resource that we can no longer train a dispatcher. So the dispatcher is more beneficial to the room because we learn the call taking and the dispatching, so we can do either side. If I train just a call taker just because they take less time, I have now used up that resource to train a dispatcher to train a call taker. So let's say it takes us 3 or 4 months to train a call taker. I just lost 3 or 4 months to train a full-time dispatcher instead.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I want to begin with, last time you were here, Christy, we congratulated you on the fact that you were full staffed. Is that still current?
We were full staffed on like our dispatchers. No, we did hire somebody and about 3 days later, they took a job on the East Coast. We are pretty close. They are not all trained, but we are pretty close. Jake just sent an offer to somebody the other day, and then we have two going to background. And it's just the call takers that we don't fully have yet.
Okay, and the second question.
Some of them have resigned.
Second question I have is the city has dumped a lot of money refurbishing that 30th Avenue fire station. Is it in your business plan to have that as a training facility?
Yes, we will use it as a training facility and a backup center. So whenever you have a backup center, you actually physically have to go down there and work. The places down here and stuff like that, they go there for a week at a time and they work in that location just to make sure everything's working, that you have your resources and everything that you need. Just kind of like when finance was working in a different location, you want to make sure that you're comfortable, everything you need and everything works. But we will also use that to train our people so we are outside of the room and be able to give them better training as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Clayworth.
Hi, Christy. A couple of questions so I can understand it better. The call takers, when I call for dispatch and I use a non-emergency number, the regular number, that goes to a call taker, I assume. And that person would normally be downstairs, is that correct?
No. You can call the regular number. If you call the 6500, we answer for the police department. And that is the person that's downstairs. If you call 459-6800, that goes upstairs to dispatch. So the call taker could be the one answering the phone or the dispatcher. We do it interchangeably. We don't have enough call takers to only have them answering the phone. And we don't have enough hours for them working to be able to do that. Usually it's a dispatcher doing both at the same time.
So under this proposal, we'd have one full-time call taker and they'd be downstairs, I assume?
Yes.
And all the other calls that would be after that person's hours would go upstairs to dispatch?
Yes, and that's what they do now as well.
Okay, thank you.
Council, what we'll have at our next meeting is a resolution showing a description of the personnel, showing the department head, supervisors, dispatchers, call taker. So you can see in writing exactly what this department will be staffed at. Mr. Ringstead, then Mr. Marnie, then Ms. Tidwell.
I also see how many of those slots are currently filled.
Yeah.
People that are employed, you know, it's like grabbing Jell-O trying to figure out if they got the 23 positions we have in our budget book, or there's 28 or there's 17 or. It's like, well,
you'll have that in front of you. That's a good idea.
How many are currently employed and working?
Mr. Marnie.
I would like to also see a new organizational chart, please. Mm-hmm. And a question for Christy. With the new ESP functioning, have you seen an influx in calls?
We take the calls and dispatch ESP now, yes. So, I mean, it didn't change our call volume per se. It just changed that we can actually send somebody to the call now because they still called us before. to ask if ESP was up, and then we would explain they're not. And then we have to decide if we're sending medical or police or nobody. So now we just are able to send another resource and do something with the call.
Ms. Tidwell.
When we do see it at the meeting, I would like to see the cost different, like the cost of those positions versus whatever the supervisor cost is. Which,
Ms. Sprinkle.
And in addition, I'd like to see who's local and who's away. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is there anything other than a full frontal review that you don't want? I mean, my God. Christy, you opened up a can of worms. And guess what? We're going to fill it for you. So anything else that we want to see? Okay, we'll go on to Finance Committee report. Margarita.
Good morning, Council, Mayor and Council. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet this Thursday in the Meeks Conference Room at 7 a.m. We will be reviewing the June 30th statements. We'll start the first phase of looking at the long-range financial plan, financial projections, and we will be reviewing the mayor's proposed target-based budgeting for operating costs. And we're still reviewing revenues for to increase non-tax by 10%. And this meeting, we're looking at auctions. So that is our meeting plan for this Thursday, the 24th at 7 a.m.
So be ready. Okay. Mayor and council member comments. We'll start with Ms. Sprinkle.
Great. I was not sure if I should ask for an overview for capital projects next meeting, but I'd love to know where we are on things like, did we ever get our big fire truck returned? Or what is going on with the childcare place? Or if our bathrooms being rehabbed? So if that's something we should do next work meeting, I'd be thrilled by that.
We'll try and have it for you. Might take an extra meeting, but we'll try. We'll get that ready for
you. Thank you. Just an update. Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Therian.
Yes, I had mentioned to Margarita that I was interested in the risk fund and how it applied to our budget. So I'd like to have that added to our work session. I know we had spoken a little bit about it. Thank you.
Mr. Clearworth.
I was talking with our manager of the Lavery Transportation Center, and I park in there, and there's been, just to give you an example, there's been a Toyota Land Cruiser sitting in there for, I don't know, 6-7 years that's never been moved. Yeah. And the neat thing about it is it's one of the older ones, and those are pretty good collectible items right now, but we need to get stuff like that out of there. And so I'm looking at Jeremiah, and we're trying to figure out a way to get those vehicles out of there and get them to the auction block so we can make some money off of those things. There's at least two in there now that I'm aware of, and possibly more. It's just basically an abandoned vehicle.
Have they run a plate to find that out, or is that just an assumption?
We can run. They've done that multiple times, I think, and researched it. But you'd have to talk to Jamie and see what the history is on that. And you're probably aware of it already. But we should get those out of there and get some money out of them.
So. Do they have a policy on that?
Abandoned vehicles? Yeah. I think that's in code, if I remember right.
We'll take a look at that. Yeah. Mr. Ringstead. Mr. Marnie.
Since Mr. Pristash is here, 8th Avenue, I know that was on our radar. So is IGU, who's got 8th Avenue torn up between?
Mr. Pristash, would you please speak into the microphone for the recording of this?
Exclusive Paving is the general contractor, and they're installing or they're helping Interior Gas install their gas line. It's in place now, and they also installed sewer and water lines there. Oh. They're just about done. So when that contract is completed, I think it's August 1st, is the the completion date. Then the DOT portion will take over and build the pavement structure for the roadway, you know, the gravel and the D1 and then the asphalt. So it'll get paved all the way from Barnett to Cowles. Oh, yeah.
Going to do it?
Well, that was coordination with the DOT and fast planning and other things, but it's all worked out.
Good.
And also, you should understand that when you're doing something like that in a high-density residential area, there are daily implications that we must look at. Tree removal.
Tree.
Blocking of driveways. Things like that. And we take care of it. Bob gets it taken care of.
So it was a combined effort.
Yeah, it was the gas company paid for their utilities. The water company paid for theirs. The city paid for the storm drain, and the DOT is paying for the pavement structure. So it's kind of a, you know, that's the preferred project delivery method where everybody pays something.
Good. I also saw you had an RFP out for 12th Avenue. Is that for curbs and stuff?
That's
Have we
fixed a drainage problem there. The street is running into that building, some garage doors. Water. There's something going on in the road there. You can tell by looking at it. When it rains, the water is running down into the road. So it's been a problem for a while, and we're going to fix it.
Thank you.
Ms. Tidwell. Okay, mayor's comments? Other than the spray painting of Golden Heart Plaza, I got no comments. Next meeting is, our next regular work session is Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. We'll have some items for you. We'll try and get the capital projects at where we're at, what we have budgeted, and long-term range of that. Okay. We're adjourned.